Bay Area writer Anne Lamott's four novels are set in Marin County, California, where she grew up. Three of her novels, Hard Laughter, Rosie, and her latest, All New People, include a father figure or a writer who has characteristics similar to her own father, novelist Kenneth Lamott. I wondered what kind of influence he had on her decision to become a writer.
I began by being deeply ashamed of him being a writer instead of having what we thought was a job. My brother and I thought he couldn't hold down a regular job, and on a few occasions it filled me with despair if I'd brought girls home after school and he was still in there typing away. But I grew up in a family where everyone was reading all the time. You know, we went to the library every single Thursday night and we got a week's worth of books.
So in many ways, I mean, you had an apprenticeship around your father, seeing how a journeyman worked without kind of a romantic ideal of a writer or a writer's life.
Yeah, I didn't have a romantic ideal of it because my father made a living at writing, but it wasn't the kind of living that writers are making now. They weren't having those massive seven and high six-figure advances then, and it was just sort of a regular living. There was always almost exactly the right amount of money, so I didn't grow up thinking I could be a writer and make a fortune.
What did you think when you saw a piece of his come out in a magazine?
Usually, I was very excited and proud, although he was very left-wing and progressive, and I wanted to fit in. You know, I was a child, of course, I wanted to be like everybody else. And when I was about 12 years old, I think, which would have been 66, he wrote an article in Horizon, which I'm not sure if it's that magazine's even around anymore, but it talks in it about having spent the afternoon out at Stinson Beach with his writer friends, having been drinking red jug wine and smoking pot. And see, dope hadn't hit yet. Marijuana hadn't hit. It wasn't okay yet. You know, I thought he was like William Burroughs or something, you know, and it was a very shabby thing to have done. And I mentioned it in this book, of course, again, because I thought it was so telling about how I was at that age. I marched into the living room holding the article and I said, "Daddy, you have brought shame upon this family." And then, of course, the next year, when I was 13, it was incredibly hip to have a father who would smoke pot, you know, and be one of the guys.
So when you were little, you saw your father disappear into this room dressed in the frumpy flannels. Now that you're going into a room wearing maybe frumpy flannels, too, do you have any empathy or connection with your father? Are you sort of startled to find yourself now also a writer?
I thought being a writer was somewhat more romantic. I didn't know that it was really so agonizing on a daily basis. I thought most writers sat down and just started writing and knew what they were doing every day and wrote 1,000 words and then called it a day and dusted off their hands and then started having drinks. But it isn't like that at all. It's really about sitting down and kind of wrestling with your demons for a while. I mean, I don't ever sit down and say, "God, I feel like $1 million today and I know exactly what I'm doing and I'm happy to be here." I sit down and I immediately leap up from the desk and I run to the kitchen. I do something I think needs to be done there, and then I sit back down and I stare at the blank page for about 5 seconds, and then I think that I immediately have to call a dentist and inquire about orthodontia or something. You know, I mean, I'm 35 and maybe it's time, and it will have never crossed my mind once before in my entire life, and then I'll sit back down and I'll write several sentences and they'll be dreadful, and then I'll cross them off and I'll start again, and then I'll leap up and I'll think, as soon as I make this one phone call, I'll buckle back down. And there's a lot of up down time. That's why I budget 5 hours to work three. Luckily, I have a commitment to every month, which is the food review for California Magazine. So
how do you divvy up your time between is it easy to shift between being a novelist to being a food reviewer? And
back when I was a novelist, which I'm not right now, I don't have a novel in mind, and I don't have the stamina to write a novel right now. There's really a tremendous amount of tension involved in writing a novel. There's a lot of plates you need to keep spinning in the air, and you have to keep kind of running underneath them and get one going again, and then the other one at the over to the right starts to slow down. You have to tear over there and get it spinning. And
so you consider yourself only a novelist when you're writing a novel? It's an interesting semantic question.
Is that a trick question, Serge?
It's not a trick question.
I guess I consider myself a novelist without a novel. It's sort of like The Stranger in the Strange Land or something. I don't know what it's like, but when I was working on All New People and doing the food review, I would know that the food review would take 2 days out of the month, and so I would budget that in, and it would always be, when you have a novel going, you're so excited, you're basically so happy to have all these characters that you are enjoying working with, and this thing is sort of evolving like in a Polaroid, you know, a Polaroid photograph, you start off with a very hazy picture of something and a sense of who you want to work with and where you are in time and place. And little by little, just like a Polaroid, it's emerging, getting very vivid and bright. And writing a food review isn't. I still sit down and think, I better go do the dishes. And then I sit down and go, come on, honey, let's try to get the food review written. And I write two lousy sentences. And then I start to think about orthodontia and whether I should find a good orthodontist. And I think it was Muriel Spark that felt that she was just, that she had a dictaphone on and she was just taking dictation from God, which I think is a completely appalling, heinous and hostile way to feel. But I don't at all.
It makes you sound envious.
Yes, very. It's just pulling teeth a lot for me.
And yet you keep coming back to it.
Yeah. Well, I'm completely unemployable. There's nothing I can do.
All New People deals with a family that becomes kind of extended because of separations and pregnancies and mixed-up love. There's a lot of drama that goes on mm-hmm. amongst this family.
Yeah.
Is this a drama based on your own experiences in life and a need to put dramatic and complicated family love and issues all in a book on a page?
None of the main characters are real. The very religious mother is secretly me. My father is real in the book. He was a writer. There was no Aunt Peg, and there was no Uncle Ed, and there was no Natalie getting pregnant by Uncle Ed, since there was no Uncle Ed. And a lot of the stuff didn't really happen, but the emotional sense of the book really happened. The feeling of loss. If anyone asked what the book is about, I would really say it's about loss. It's about loss of childhood and loss of self. It's about the loss of a town. A lot of very painful stuff happened in that town, and so that part's true. But the facts of the Goodman, the fictional Goodman story, are not true at all. The migraines are true. All the migraine stuff is really true, and it was. I think it really shaped me. I think to be a 4-year-old and a 5-year-old with migraine headaches is to go through life feeling like a mental patient, you know, and to feel profoundly different than everybody else, you know. I mean, Updike had his psoriasis. Is that what he had?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it really sets you apart, and it really gets the old jungle drums of shame beating pretty loudly in you to not be able to control this thing that happens every so often, maybe at a birthday party, or maybe at the theater, or maybe at the Nutcracker, and all of a sudden this thing is happening that's like the alien, something from within you is causing you to no longer be an okay person. And of course the desperation of childhood is to be okay, you know, to fit in. And I couldn't, because all of a sudden this white light would start showing up behind my eyes and I'd start hearing the distant drone of mosquitoes, and it would mean a headache was coming.
Do you still get the migraines?
No, I grew out of them. Mm-hmm. Thank God, when I was about 17 years old, I never had another one.
Your stories and these experiences all seem to say that you like taking small pleasures in life. I mean, you see small things, these details, these small achievements. Having 4 novels published at the age of 36 is an achievement, but
35.
It seems... 30. but the real triumphs are in getting a line down on page.
Yeah, I write small books. I don't write big sweeping panoramas. I don't understand them. I don't understand the big picture. I just understand these small... I understand that it is human love that saves us over and over again, and I understand that we find families for ourselves as adults that were maybe not the family of origin, but that are the families in which we find the nourishment and the feedback and the teasing and the companionship and the understanding and the everything we need to grow and to keep growing, and that's all I write about. I write about families.
I should say that you are a friend of mine. I've known you for about 5 years, and in fact, we are in kind of an extended family of our own, which we call the Reading Group.
Yes.
In San Francisco.
That's right.
How has this fulfilled a role of family for you, the idea of a reading group where we nominally get together to read a book?
I love the nominally part. The thing I love most about our reading group is that we read so little. You know, we get together and we gossip, and then we mule and puke about how difficult our own work has been that day, and then we mule and puke some more about the latest slings and arrows we've suffered at the hands of the cruel publishing world, and then we talk about books, which we all love so deeply. And I think that's probably what my father was doing. He was sitting around with the red wine and a lot of Evan Cannell and Calvin Kentfield and a lot of old Bay Area writers, and they gossiped and they complained, and It also gives me that sense of that I'm not different, that it is a painstaking process to write a book or an article or a review or an anything, and that the rest of you aren't sitting down feeling like $1 million and typing out your things. You know, you sit there and you're tortured a lot of the time, and the low self-esteem kicks in, and it says you aren't any good, and it says the well has run dry, and it says that you aren't going to get the magic to happen again. And when we're all admitting to that, it gives me a strange sense of faith, you know, that as long as I'm doing it like everybody else, I may try to do it for one more day.
Well, Anne Lamott, thank you very much for coming and being with us on Fresh Air today.
Great. You're welcome. Thanks a lot.
Writer Anne Lamott. Her new novel, All New People, is published by North Point Press.